Mesdames, Messieurs,
Ladies and gentlemen.
Bonsoir.
Good evening.
Je voudrais d'abord vous dire à quel point je suis ravi de
vous It's a pleasure to see you all again.
La nouvelle n'a commencé qu'à pointer à l'horizon.
Here we are in 2011. It's only just begun. What a lovely way to start. Happy New Year to all of you. I don't know what it will bring to you and yours. I have no idea what it's going to bring for me. But I wish you all the best. I know, however, it's going to be an important year for the euro. And it was to talk about the euro's problems that we came together today. The euro is not the problem as such, but we have a crisis in a number of member states. The euro as such does not have a problem, but it's a crisis in some countries. To prove that the euro does not have a problem, we have decided that in 2012 there's going to be a commemorative 2-euro coin brought out to symbolize the 10th anniversary of the introduction of the euro. It shows that we very much believe the euro will still exist, and those who speculated that the euro would no longer exist are wrong. And the coins, at least, will still be very physical evidence of that in 2012. And the 2-euro coin to be emitted, which have legal tender throughout the eurozone, is, as I say, embodiment of that. We also, today, formally welcome the Estonian minister to the meeting. Estonia is now part of the euro. From the 1st of January, it has been formally, and we heard the explanations from the Estonian minister describing how they introduced the euro to Estonia in terms of arranging things, and the Commission and the bank then took the floor, and they didn't have anything much to say apart from congratulating the Estonian authorities for the elegance and expertise with which they'd managed the switch over to the euro within their territory. We also discussed the adjustment programs for Ireland and Greece. We took stock of progress. Everything is on course as was supposed to be, and the third tranche for Greece is going to be sometime later this month. Is it after day after tomorrow, the 19th? It's happening anyway, as it was supposed to be. And the EFSF procedure for Ireland is also going forward in terms of the monies for the loan. The first EFSM payment was the beginning of the month. The 5 billion euro bonds were put to the market and at a very good rate, 2.something%, which is very good, shows trust of markets in the eurozone solidity and the confidence of the markets in that. When you talk about the eurozone, credibility in the markets is no longer in question when you talk about the euro as a zone. And that gives me a lot of faith, bearing in mind some of the other things that others say here and there. We also looked at developments of all types in the eurozone. We looked at the economic and financial events, the consequences for the real economy, basically positive indicators, confidence progressing in a remarkable way. The economy, in our view, should continue to grow in the first semester and indeed in coming semesters after that, too. Markets remain volatile, but the latest developments were encouraging. The spreads on sovereigns have moved in ways that illustrate this. The measures taken so far seem to be working, particularly, for instance, the measures taken in Portugal and Spain, because those measures seem to have borne fruit. In the case of Portugal, there's been a major package, and the quarterly monetary deficit has been strengthened further. The budgetary framework has been tightened even further. In Spain, ambitious measures have also been taken to cut the deficit and to make the labor market more efficient, and to strengthen the banking sector. Spain is really an example of budgetary consolidation in this respect. And in terms of structural reforms as well. These and other such actions will contribute, in my view, to the stabilization of the two countries concerned and also to the stabilization of the Eurozone as a whole. As you remember, in December, the European Council asked the Eurogroup ministers to come forward with a comprehensive response, a global overarching response to the challenges that we all face. Today, we started that discussion. We exchanged views on a number of elements, all of which will likely be part of such a comprehensive package. These discussions have to continue. We were asked to finish over the next few months. I mean, that's what the conclusion of the Council in December said. We're going to, as a Eurogroup, crack on and accelerate our work. We want to come forward as quickly as possible to the European Council with the conclusion of our work. Today, we examined different elements that are the ingredients to a comprehensive and global response. We're going to accelerate, as I said, our work even further so that as soon as possible we can bring the conclusions to the European Council once we reach final conclusions and definitive conclusions, and we think that will happen soon. I can't go into too much detail at this stage of substance, but we looked at a number of procedural aspects too. These have to be thought about for the stability mechanism, the permanent European stability mechanism, the crisis mechanism. There again, we've been asked by the European Council to take forward in more detail what we'd already discussed in November and at the European Council in December. Now, the work of taking these conclusions further forward is complicated because I'm going to have to do several things. This is an intergovernmental instrument, which means you have countries that are in the EU that are going to have to meet. Then the other member states that are interested in this process will join. These are two meetings, member states of the Eurogroup, member states of the 27. These two meetings will be presided over by your humble servant, Eurogroup. And then in March, we have to tell the European Council what we ask from them in terms of fleshing out the approach we've already described. A legal text before March is not going to be ready. You can't expect that, but we can provide the input which we are expected to by the European Council. We also reviewed the moves taken by Malta, assessment of the action taken by Malta to, as part of the EDP procedure. We all felt that these efforts were appropriate and sufficient, and we applauded and welcomed those measures. Another item on the agenda was the discussion of a new member for the ECB Executive Board. The Austrian member is going to be replaced, so we have a candidate from Slovakia and a candidate from Belgium. The nomination procedure will be formally launched, and basically that's about it. That sort of sums up our agenda and what we discussed. There was a long debate about the FSF and how to flesh out the details thereof. But as I've said, that's an ongoing process for the next few weeks as well. Olli?
Thank you, Jean-Claude. Ladies and gentlemen, the economic situation and outlook of Europe is reflecting a certain dualism for the moment. On the one hand, the recent soft and hard data confirm that the recovery in the real economy has taken hold and is progressing. In fact, also becoming more self-sustaining because it is spreading from export growth to the domestic demand. On the other hand, there are continued tensions in the financial markets, not least in the sovereign debt markets, which underlines the need to agree on a comprehensive response to the sovereign debt crisis. As Jean-Claude Juncker said, we discussed this comprehensive response. It is a work in progress, and progress is being made. And in this context, we shall finalize our effective policy response shortly, following a careful preparation. By and large, the key elements of such a comprehensive response are included in the Commission's annual growth survey of last week. And I would like to point out particularly into four issues which are going to be essential elements of this comprehensive response. First, the euro area member states need to pursue fiscal consolidation and growth-enhancing structural reforms with full determination. And here we noted the recent bold decisions taken especially by Spain and also Portugal. And we endorse both countries to move effectively forward in this road. Second, we shall improve our currently existing financial backstops so that the so-called market forces cannot have even the slightest doubt about our capacity to act even in the most stressed scenarios. In the Commission's view, the effective lending capacity of the EFSF must be reinforced and its scope of activities widened. Third, the repair of the banking sector needs to be completed to safeguard the provision of credit to the real economy, to the enterprises, households, consumers. And therefore, another round of bank stress tests, even more rigorous than the one of last year, will be conducted in the coming months. The results of these stress tests will guide the necessary restructuring and parallel restructuring of the banking sector. And fourth, we expect that the Council and the Parliament will deliver on their commitment to approve the Commission's legislative proposals for reinforced economic governance by this summer, by the coming summer, and avoid any watering down of these proposals. It is essential to show that we have learned the lessons of the past for the sake of the future, and that we will fundamentally reinforce the foundations of the EU's economic governance. And finally, as said by Jean-Claude, we will secure an agreement on the future permanent European Stability Mechanism by March. The ESM should be sufficiently large to ensure its credibility in the markets and be able to use a variety of instruments. All in all, we can make this year, 2011, the year when Europe overcame the financial crisis, lifted its growth potential, and reformed its economic governance. This calls for a comprehensive response by the whole EU, by the entire European Union, and this calls for bold fiscal and structural measures in all member states of the Union, not least of the euro area.
Guy Johnson from CNBC. Mr. Juncker, you said that you're working on the details of what happens next with the EFSF. Mr. Wren talked about the fact that he would like to see its remit expanded. How much agreement in the room is there that the EFSF now needs to be expanded in both scope and in size?
We were mentioning during the debates a range of problems which have to be addressed in the in relation with the EFSF and in relation with the comprehensive response to be given towards the threats we are facing. I would say that there is a huge amount of common views. There are slight differences of views, but these are not dramatic. We'll speed up our work in a way to be in a position to deliver a total comprehensive report to the European Council as soon as possible.
Alvise Armellini from German press agency, DPA. Given that the Commission has called for a deal at the latest by the 4th of February on this EFSF, on the enlarging it, on strengthening it, do you think that you need to meet again before that date to finalize the work, or how would you do this? And also, could you say whether you discussed about extending the maturity of the Greek loan repayments? Thank you.
In English or in German?
English.
Because, also, wenn DPA fragt, kann ich auch auf Deutsch antworten, aber nicht jeder, der für DPA arbeitet, ist der deutschen Sprache mächtig, so I will express myself in English. We do think that we have good reasons to accelerate our work and to speed up the preparation of this comprehensive response the European Council asked us to present, as the European Council was saying, in December, in the next coming months. I don't think that we'll need months, and we will try to be as efficient as possible. If supplementary meetings are needed, these supplementary meetings will take place, but I wouldn't give a date of foreclosure of our work, but the work will be done at the highest speed possible. As concerns the lengthening of the Greek maturity, we're not discussing this in detail, as this is a part of the comprehensive package we are supposed to deliver, but already in December there was a general consensus that the lengthening of the maturity there should be, and this decision in principle was confirmed today, but will be part of the comprehensive package. Will accelerate as I said.
Okay. Arthur Beasley from the Irish Times. How realistic is it to believe that there may be a reduction in the interest rate that applies to Irish bailout loans? Are there countries apart from Ireland that are strongly in favour of that notion? And are there countries apart from Ireland that are strongly opposed to it? Thank you.
I'm not very eager to give a clear-cut response to the question you just mentioned. We are at the beginning of a very serious and broad discussion on instruments and means which could be put into place, and questions of that kind will be taken under exam during that preparation. I didn't say that this question will be taken under exam. I didn't say that this question will not be taken under exam.
Hello there.
Would I have asked that question, I would be frustrated by this response. But that's part of my job.
Hello there, Joel Hill.
Who is speaking?
Sorry, apologies.
Yeah.
Over
who,
here.
Where?
Sorry.
Ah. Because he's making the choice. Huh?
I know.
Yeah. So you are, in his sense.
From Sky News, my name is Joel Hills.
Yeah,
it is the view of the Economist's intelligence unit that Greece is effectively bust. Therefore, some... do you share...
There are words I don't understand.
No. That Greece is technically insolvent, and however much money you lend to it, it will not be able to repay its debts. Do you take that view? Do you share that view? Do you agree with that? And if you do, is there discussion talking at this level about the restructuring of debts?
The answer to your first question is no, which leads to the conclusion that I don't have to respond to the second question.
Alexandre Kounis, du journal Les Echos. Est-ce que vous pouvez
nous expliquer les moyens techniques means which you have available to increase the fund's borrowing capacity at the moment? Well, we're currently looking at this in detail, examining the different instruments which we could trigger. Obviously, the decision taken in May says that the facility will make 440 billion euros available. And we are looking at the different ways that we can actually do that. Now, we've got to be very clear about this. We've entered into commitments. We did that in May. Those commitments will be respected. And we will also be following up on the European Council conclusions that said that the member states of the Eurozone will do everything to ensure financial stability of the euro. It's normal that we would have technical discussions about this, to discuss also the substance and to ensure that we can guarantee the financial stability of the Eurozone. We will do everything that we can to do that, including making available the amounts we have available under the fund.
I'd like to ask you again about the timing. Within the Eurogroup, was Mr. Rehn able to get Mr. Barroso's timetable enough support, aiming at the solution by the 4th of February,
in shorthand? You've mentioned the month of March instead. Does that mean you don't see the problems being very urgent in Spain or Portugal? Mr. Juncker, I didn't say that we'd come forward with our comprehensive conclusions and response only in March. I said we were going to accelerate our work. We will provide the response from the Eurogroup to the European Council as soon as possible. We're going to accelerate our work. But I don't like tying myself to dates. But I didn't actually say it would only be in March. I certainly didn't say it was the 4th of February either. We're going to work, we're going to speed up our work, and when we're ready, we'll announce it. But it's not going to take forever. There is a certain amount of urgency. We need to get results reasonably quickly.
António Seixas Martins, da televisão portuguesa.
From Portuguese television,
António Seixas Martins.
Did you today discuss ways in which to make the fund more flexible? And if so, how much progress, if any, did you make? You said earlier that Spain is exemplary when it comes to budgetary consolidation. Portugal is in a similar situation doing similar things. So what did you think about the latest news from Portugal? Portugal is making great efforts, remarkable efforts. I admire the courage of the Portuguese government imposing reforms that they are pushing forward or have pushed forward. I have nothing more to say to criticize or assess measures in the pipeline that have been taken, that will be taken, or anything. I mean, for both Spain and Portugal, I'll say the same thing. And for both Spain and Portugal, and for you, I will say the following. Consolidation of the budget is necessary, but it also requires structural reform, many of which have indeed already been implemented or announced. Other than that, we didn't say very much about Spain or Portugal in specific cases tonight. And as to qualitative tweaking one could bring to the ESFF working, we've looked at a number of solutions. It's part of what we have to do over the next few weeks. We're discussing different options. We haven't privileged any particular path yet.
Oui, Sophie Lobby de l'AFP, vous avez dit tout à l'heure qu'il y avait huge amount of common views. Je voulais savoir sur quoi ça portait exactement et si c'était notamment sur l'idée de renforcer la capacité de prêt du fonds. Et par ailleurs, je voulais savoir si parmi les pays qui s'étaient mis d'accord, on pouvait notamment regrouper une série de pays qui sont les mieux notés de la zone euro.
Those are in the best position in the eurozone, that is.
Well,
at the moment, we're checking out a number of options and we'll know the outcome of the analyses very soon. And that will be when we'll agree on these matters, because the countries also with the, sorry, the AAA countries have a specific responsibility when it comes to constituting the reserve, and others need to know that.
Jan Strzelczewski from Reuters, could you tell us if you specifically discussed the possibility of the EFSF buying bonds on the secondary market, and if so, what was the support for that idea in the room?
We were discussing all the ingredients which can be envisaged to enrich the existing mechanism of the facility and. This work will be pursued. It's too early to say what kind of conclusions we'll reach.
Jim Neuger from Bloomberg. Did the discussion focus solely on ways of bringing the EFSF up to its full potential of 440 billion? Or was there also discussion of increasing its headline size? Secondly, getting back to the interest rate issue, what is your sense of what a more suitable interest rate would be for a country like Ireland? And third, could you remind us of the names of the two candidates for the ECB board position? Thank you.
The third question being the easiest one, I will start by that one. The name of the Belgium candidate is Pieter Praat, P-A-E-T, and the name of the Slovakian candidate is Mrs. Elena Kohutikova, K-O-H-U-T-I-K-O-V-A. Did you get it? I don't remember your second question, and the first question was how broad the discussion was, and the discussion was broad and will be narrowed in the next coming days and weeks.
Peter Spiegel with the Financial Times. His other question was about...
That sounds dangerous.
We try. The other question was about Ireland. I have a similar question. Yeah. If I could just maybe ask it at a very basic level. The Irish finance minister coming into the meeting said he would like to discuss the interest rate. Can you just give us an idea if that was discussed and raised? And also for Commissioner Wren, you talked a bit about the stress tests. I think you mentioned in the coming months. I think originally the schedule was for February. Is that still on track? Have we moved to the right on that? Can you just give us an update on what the time frame is on that? Thank you.
We were discussing in general terms the question of lowering the interest load for countries concerned, but we did not discuss this point in a sufficient detail that I could be able to give you the maybe outcome of that debate. This makes part of the ingredients of the components of the comprehensive package we'll deliver in some time from now.
We discussed indeed the conduct of the next round of bank stress tests and the preparations have started. It is a joint operation of the European Banking Authority, that is the new micro-supervisor of banking activities at the European level, with the national supervisors, the ECB and the Commission. We have previously referred to February in a sense that this work will start then. It's a process, of course, and this process will be conducted in the course of the spring-winter, which, as you well know, in the country I know best, stretches from February until June. So during the first half of the year, these stress tests will be conducted. We are currently designing the methodology, and then the tests will be conducted even with more rigor than last time around.
Given the length of winter time in Finland, I fully understand how why Olli was so happy when he was reconducted as a commissioner in Brussels.
Please. Florence Autrey, La Tribune. Une question pour le commissaire Rehn.
Question for Commissioner Rehn on stress tests.
Est-ce que vous pouvez nous expliquer
could
en quoi ces stress tests vont s'avérer plus crédibles que les précédents?
How the stress tests are going to be more credible than the previous round? Now we've seen what's happened to Ireland, and so the earlier tests were not very convincing.
So, plus sérieux et quel lien fonctionnel
will these stress tests be more serious? And what link do you make between possible need to recapitalize banks, which will come out of the stress test, and the EFSF?
Merci pour votre question. We have, in fact, two key elements in designing the stress tests. The first one is to define the common methodology, which is currently in the process of being done. And secondly, of course, we have the concrete implementation, the mise en œuvre of the stress tests at the national level, supervised by the European Banking Authority. In the 2010 exercise, the stress scenarios were in fact very rigorous, even adverse. They were even more adverse than would have been perhaps merited in the light of today, in a sense that economic growth last year was stronger than assumed in the most adverse scenarios of the stress tests. The problem to my mind last time around was that there was a certain variety of the quality of implementation in different member states. Overall, the methodology was solid. Broadly, the implementation was better than the reputation of the stress tests. But yes, there were some weaknesses in some member states. And now, with the new architecture of financial regulation and supervision, and with the European Banking Authority in play, I'm sure that we will get better and even more convincing results this time around.
Philippe Ricard, pour Le Monde, vous nous avez indiqué que vous étiez chargé de présider en fait les réunions sur la mise en place du.
There's been meetings presiding the European Stability Mechanism, the mandate. What mandate exactly does this give you, looking also at other aspects? You've got two exercises to deal with in parallel, as you described. What about the second one? What sort of remit do you have, social, economic, and other aspects of the Eurozone? Well, I don't need a mandate to think about things in general anyway. I always think. Sometimes what I think isn't very promising and people are rather disappointed, but that's the way it is. But I'm always thinking, and right from the first semester of 1991, I've been a partisan of strengthening economic policy coordination. I've always thought that there's a.
There's an imbalance between a well-organized monetary dimension and a comparatively weak economic and monetary policy wing, and the
two together lead to problems that are almost insoluble. So right from the outset, I've been one of those who said we needed more coordination for economic policies and so on as well. But the mandate I was given and that you referred to has nothing to do with that. The mandate I was given is for the Eurozone, 17 member states, to agree, and then to agree, as the Council asked them to, with the other members of the EU to set up a permanent crisis mechanism, which would only cover the Eurozone, and only the members of the Eurozone can vote on that. The thing is, because there are 27 in the EU, the others should be associated in this discussion too, and involved in taking the decision. I'll take one last question.
Peter Ehrlich, Financial Times Deutschland, eine Frage auf Deutsch.
Question in German, if I may. We've heard that there was a meeting of the six members of the Eurozone who have a triple A rating. When it comes to fund restructuring, do you think that there's a special job for those six countries to do, making up as they do 61% of the EFSF? And if so, what would that job look like? Well, I wanted just to know in advance how those six countries see future procedure, because I didn't want to find out in Eurogroup meetings and other meetings that there was a lack of agreement amongst the AAA countries. It was a very informal, friendly discussion. It didn't lead to any splits within the Eurogroup on the actions we want to take. But it's just a question of knowing in advance, knowing, if I can put it so casually, how the main contributors actually see the situation. It saved me making six phone calls. That's why we had the meeting. Good evening.